கத்ரினா
நானா யோஞ்சினா
ஏ கத்ரினா
நானா யோஞ்சினா
க பைக்ல தம் மைம் போர்த்தா மைம் தம் க பேண்ட்ரா போர்த்தா பேண்ட்ரா சத்யா ரணம் துக்கல வீசி போய்த்தா ஏ கத்ரினா
நானா யோஞ்சினா
ஏ கத்ரினா
நானா யோஞ்சினா
க பைக்ல தம் மைம் போர்த்தா மைம் தம் க பேண்ட்ரா போர்த்தா பேண்ட்ரா சத்யா ரணம் துக்கல வீசி போய்த்தா சோசார் ஹவுந்தா கொய்தானா
சல் சல் யூஞ்சினா
கித்யா பாயே கத்ரினா
சல் சல் யூஞ்சினா
கித்யா பாயே கத்ரினா
பட்டடே வடே க்யோன் திசி பேல் புரி பந்துன் திசி பைக்கலானை அமெரிக்கா சங்காதாயேதா
Everest Coffee, roasted right here in Auckland. Everest Coffee use the highest quality Arabica AA coffee beans, giving you an elite blend of taste and strength. Treat yourself to the Wonder Coffee Bean. Enjoy Everest Coffee. It's for the discerning coffee palate. Everest Coffee. It's coffee at its peak. Available now at New World or buy online at everestcoffee.co.nz.
नमस्कार अनि स्वागत करता हूँ रिची तुमका आई सुशेगा दन पार कोंकणी रेडियो प्रोग्रामर आज मुझे संगत असा जीवान कैशमोर ही इज फ्रॉम द मैत्रा 10 गार्डन सेक्शन ही इज द टीम लीडर देयर एंड ही इज कम टू शेयर विद अस सम ऑफ हिज इनसाइट्स हिज वंडरफुल नॉलेज अबाउट गार्डनिंग पर्टिकुलरली वेजी गार्डनिंग एज सच वेलकम टू आवर प्रोग्राम जीवान
थैंक यू
Jivan and Jeevan, is this the correct way of pronouncing or...?
Both of them work for me. Either Jeevan, I'm used to. I've been called Jeevan throughout my whole life, but my family calls me Jivan, so either way is absolutely fine.
Fine. So is there a connection between... this name is very popular in India.
My father spent a lot of time in India.
Okay.
So when he was trying to find a name, or him and my mother were trying to find a name for me, they had a packet of incense, and they had opened it up, and I guess the inside of the incense packet was an old newspaper. And it was Javan and someone else had got married, and so that's how they found the name, and that's, yeah, how I was named.
And so how were you treated at school? Were there any...
No, not much of a problem, really. I was pretty strong-willed, so, yeah.
So it went on fine?
Went on fine. Although most people mispronounce my name, so I get many different variations. The main ones are Jivan and Javan, so.
That's good. So tell us something about yourself. I mean, which part of New Zealand are you from originally, and how have you to come about to settle in this profession or occupation, should I say, of a gardening specialist?
Okay, so well, I have lived in Auckland most of my life, but I also lived in America, which is where I met my wife. Uh-huh. But I got into gardening as a teenager. So I'd been traveling around New Zealand, and I came back to Auckland and started doing a horticultural course out in actual Glen Eden, which is where I live now. And luckily, a friend of mine put me up, and I was living with her, and she had a glasshouse on her property out in Karikari. And luckily, again, the previous owners or the previous tenants had been florists. So I had stacks of books and a glasshouse, and I was studying horticulture. And before long, I had a glasshouse packed full of plants, and that's really where my passion began.
So you must be an environmentalist. You're very passionate about the environment and the greenery around.
Yeah.
And particularly in a place like Glen Eden, where people are quite passionate about their green patches.
Yes, they certainly are.
So you were brought up right in the midst of this huge community that sort of enthused or sort of built up your passion for this profession as such.
Yeah, most certainly.
So what do you do at Maitre 10?
Okay, so I was hired there originally. Actually, I started there because I was working for Yates as a garden guide. So I went there and I would talk to people about gardening and answer their gardening questions. And after I finished that role, I was picked up as their product specialist. So I worked there as a product specialist for a while, and then moved my way up to be a team leader, and that's my role now.
So what do people come and ask you as...
All sorts. Huge range. So it'll be people will bring in bits of plants that are diseased and ask me what's wrong with this, or some people just want to come in and chat about gardening. Mm-hmm. Other people will have some more serious problems, like root rot, or they'll have, you know, their hedges dying, or Bux's blight, or, you know, a range of different issues.
So we are now getting into summer.
Yes.
Just experiencing spring.
That's right. You can see it today.
Yeah. It's been a very glorious day. I think you must have done a lot of things in your garden today in the morning.
To be honest, I spent most of my morning looking after my animals, I have to admit. So I really do need to get on to my spring gardening.
What pets do you have at home?
I have Muscovy ducks.
Okay.
I have Medina pigeons.
Uh-huh.
I have rabbits, which has gotten a little out of control, I have to say, and a pet frog.
Rabbits in out of control.
Oh, yes. We had a male rabbit. I had one free-range female rabbit, and then the neighbor's rabbit came down and visited, and then I had 6, and then I had 12, and yes, so a bit of a problem. But
okay. So you'll be getting down to your spring garden or your summer garden?
Yeah, most certainly.
Garden.
I really want to, because my garden was taken over by my rabbits. So because I have the ducks, which get into the garden, it's always been fenced off. So when the rabbit population exploded, they actually ended up going in there. So I have to either shift them out or start a new patch, to be honest.
But tell me, how did you manage to get around with the council? I think the council is very particular of how many pets you can have on your site.
I don't think they've noticed yet, to be honest.
So, they're not causing a problem to your neighbours.
Well, they did, but not anymore. So for a little while there, when the population first exploded, it was a little bit of a problem. But it's since been taken care of. The pet stores now has a bunch of them.
You are now in the midst of spring. We are all in the midst of spring.
Uh-huh.
We are all in the midst of summer. So how do we start rectifying our garden patches to make the best use of summer? Where do we start first?
I think the most important thing is to start by adding a large amount of organic matter to your garden. I think that is one of the most important things and often neglected, is adding, obviously it's going to depend on the sort of soil type you have, but the first thing would be to start working your garden over and refreshing the soil. You know, sweetening the soil. So adding your lime, adding your compost, sheep pellets, products like Dynamic Lifter, which is a chicken manure-based product, are fantastic. But things like lime, you really want to start a few weeks before you're planning on actually planting in there, because it really needs to dissolve through the garden. So right now, or a few weeks ago, was a really good time to just start prepping the actual soil.
Mm-hmm. So what are the different types of soil that we get in Auckland?
The most common soil is clay, but you still, like in Mount Albert, where we are right now, I believe they have volcanic soil, and they have quite readily free-draining soil, which is normally a good thing, but it does have its downsides. So with really rocky, free-draining soil like you've got in this area here, it's very hard for the soil to hold on to the nutrients. And it also can be more difficult when you have hot days, because the water drains freely. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with clay, it's almost the opposite. Clay is incredibly nutritious, but the nutrients are totally bound up in that clay. So the important thing there is actually breaking the clay down, which isn't an easy process or a quick... Well, it doesn't have to be a hard process, but it's not a quick process. It really takes time working with things like gypsum and incorporating your organic matter and really working the clay, really working the soil.
So how would you say that your soil is well prepared for the summer? Is there some way of assessing the quality of your soil, or is there...
The structure, I would say. More than anything, the structure of the soil is going to tell you the most. You know,
so what do you mean by structure? Just put your hands through it?
It shouldn't clump together. It should crumble. It should be nice and dark, sweet smelling.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So just like an apple crumble, as you could say, is it?
Yeah. So it holds together. Yeah. It's not totally sandy, so it's not just falling to pieces, but it's not clumpy and it's not sodden.
Yeah. You mentioned that you should use fertilizers or some organic material to enhance the quality of the soil.
Definitely.
What do you mean by organic or fertilizers? What sort of fertilizers? There are chemical fertilizers, there are organic.
And organic-based fertilizers. So I'm not talking about certified organic. I'm talking about something that is literally organic, something that's,
in the house itself, is it? You sort of...
Not necessarily. So sheep pellets are a great organic material to add to your garden.
Okay.
Your compost, your worm castings, if you have worm castings.
Yep.
You can work in other things like seaweed and stuff like that if you start early enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be amazing for helping the structure of your soil.
What about rodents? When you start using these organics fertilizers, what about rodents? Do they keep coming in?
I think rodents are more of a problem when you're trying to compost.
Okay.
If you've got a worm farm, you kind of isolate them. You keep them out of the area. But I guess as long as you've incorporated that organic matter through the soil well, then you should be okay.
Okay. So what's the difference between acidic and alkaline soil? People talk about this is an acidic base, this is alkaline base. How do I assess it?
Okay, so you can assess it by actually using a pH tester, but for most people, it's not really necessary. Okay, the problem with acidic soil or soil that's too alkaline is both of them limit nutrient absorption.
Okay.
So, for example, I just planted a lemon tree into some really nutritious, overly fertile soil, and I ended up with an iron deficiency. And it wasn't that the soil was deficient in iron, it's that because it was so nutritious, so much nitrogen, the nitrogen made it acidic. The acidity meant that it couldn't absorb the actual iron that was already in the soil. So you start to limit the plant's ability to absorb other nutrients in the soil, and that's the biggest problem. It's not so much the acidity itself as it is the actual plant's ability to absorb the nutrients. Using stuff like dolomite lime or just regular garden lime can balance the pH. So, but you need to work, like I mentioned earlier, you need to start doing something like that quite a while before you want to plant in your garden, especially if you're going to be trying to test it, because it takes time for lime to dissolve.
What's the period?
To be honest, a couple of months potentially.
So it is horses for courses. You would decide that I want to plant, say, A, B, C, or D type of veggies, but you may not get the soil that you want. Or you may prepare the soil first and then you say, oh, I want to do this, but it doesn't go with that soil. So how would you decide what sort of veggies or what sort of plants you need to go into?
The way I like to do it is to make it relatively simple, and you can do this in one garden bed, is to prepare your garden bed, as we mentioned, adding in lots of organic matter, okay, and just so it's all the same. And then the way I do it is I section it in my mind into three sections, into leafing crops, into fruiting crops, and into root crops.
Okay, and
in that case, for your leafy crops, you may not need to do anything because you've already added your nutrients in there. But adding something like urea or ammonia to that section, to the section where you want, nice, vibrant, green growth.
Yeah.
And then for your root crops, you want to be careful about adding too much nitrogen after the fact. You know, preparing your garden bed is fine with your manure, etc. But you want to really focus on your phosphate. And your phosphate is the main nutrient used for root development. And then at the other end, you've got your fruiting crops, and that's your potassium. So you can work your garden that way. Prepare it all.
So you're saying just one patch, divide it into three parts or four parts or five parts, as big as the patches.
Exactly.
So is it to be on the ground or in containers? Today I spent quite a bit of time preparing one container. I'm not a tradesman.
Well, container planting is becoming incredibly popular because you don't have to work with the existing soil.
Correct.
You know, you can import the soil from elsewhere, and so it's easy. The downside with container planting is the soil, it can get quite hot. Okay, when you're planting in the ground, it's the temperature's controlled. It also means that you don't often have to water as regularly when you're planting in containers, especially if you're doing planting quite a lot in there. It can be really difficult during the summer months to actually to keep it watered. The other issue is the type of fertilizers you can use in a pot can be limiting as well. For example, your granular chemical fertilizers, if you're using those in a pot, you can end up with too much nitrogen and you can burn the plants, or you can have issues like I was talking about with nutrient deficiencies and the soil being too acidic, or you can end up with heavy metal buildup, and that's one of the downsides of using chemical fertilizers in general, is heavy metals that can bioaccumulate or get their way into your food source. So,
well, you're listening to Sushikar Dhanpar. We have Jivan Cashmore on our program today, talking about how to prepare a good veggie patch this summer. So we take a short break and listen to some nice music.
Do unui dole moge burundu cami coșe putvole zai duca după din calza și sundrim liplo cu pat molba ristronam ca tu ver corucci tvoi furar ula sotam sobe mazar coso pusundato por la ecuotar Bordita, tu cavalo tut storia.
Katat Sushega Dan Par Konkani Radio Program 104.6 Planet FM Aware. Muja Sangata Azasa Jivan Cashmore, Maitra Ten Andown Gardening Section Antlo Team Leader. So Jivan, we spoke about preparing the garden bed, or whether on the floor or whether on the floor of the garden or in a planter.
Yeah.
Now let's get back to understanding what type of veggies that you would recommend, particularly in a place like Auckland. What type of veggies would you recommend?
I would say,
given the type of soil that we have and the challenges that we have in looking after them, so what type of veggies?
Again, I guess it's going to depend on whether you're planting in a container or straight into the ground. If you're really trying to work with the soil that you've got, then there are certain vegetables that are easier to grow than others. You know, for tomatoes, for example, are incredibly greedy and disease-prone, so they may not be the best pick and may be better suited for a pot. But really, in Auckland, in the Auckland climate, you can get away with virtually everything.
Okay.
And this time of year, it's not too hot. So your leafy greens are not going to bolt or go to flower. So it's a great time of year for lettuces and spinach, for herbs, etc. But you're really there's not really a lot of limitations because bar a few winter specific crops. So garlic, broad beans. It's really not a huge amount else. There's not a lot of limitations. I would say now's a great time to plant potatoes if you want to have them for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Good time to get started with tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Leafy greens most certainly, because once you get into the summer months, it's a lot harder to keep them, like I said, from bolting, going to flower and keeping them actually hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
So almost what you can see in the grocery store, almost everything you can grow this time
so
of year.
So you are also getting into the process of getting your garden in place after the rabbits ran amok.
Or took over, I should say.
Took over your garden as such. What are you planning to do?
Myself? Well, it depends on whether I get that garden back quickly. Okay. I've got another raised bed ready to go. So I'm probably going to cheat, I have to say, and import the soil in because I'm out in Glen Eden and it's a total clay base. Okay. And it, I guess it's cheating a bit, but it does make life a lot easier. So the way I would do it, or the way I'm going to do it, I should say, is I'll dig down into the clay base.
How deep would you go?
Well, for me, it's about 5 centimetres, so okay. Not far. So dig down into the clay base, incorporate something like gypsum.
Okay.
Work it through the soil.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get in a trailer load of pre-made veggie mix or you know, topsoil, potting soil. And... Like I stated earlier, just add a bit of manure, sheep pellets, your compost, etc., and then prepare my garden bed as I mentioned with certain areas for certain crops depending on
what are you going to plant in there.
Okay, well, my wife always insists on I plant tomatoes, although I always end up with some sort of disease or something like that. So it'll be tomatoes, bell peppers, most certainly. I do like growing what they call the three sisters, where you do a backdrop of corn.
Okay.
Yep, you grow your beans up the corn.
Oh.
Yep, and then you grow like a squash down the bottom.
But squash starts spreading all over the place.
Yeah, but that's the benefit here. So
why?
Because it's going to suppress your weeds. It's going to keep the soil cool, keep it moist. Okay. The beans that you plant are going to put nitrogen, peas are going to put nitrogen back into the soil.
Okay.
And the corn itself, which isn't a crop that gets you a great harvest, you know, it's usually one or two corn cobs, you know, per plant, really provides a shelter from the wind and a structure for the peas or beans to grow up.
Oh, so it's basically a bit of knowledge to understand what you grow and what you don't grow given this location where you are in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's by experience. You already know what to grow and not to grow as such.
Yes.
So is this aspect of what we call it as, what they say, twin planting or...
A companion planting?
Companion planting is what they call it as. How important it is?
It depends. It can be quite important for organic, for true organic gardening, when you're limited in the amount of pesticides and stuff that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain plants that are known to aid other plants. You know, you could do something as simple as just planting marigolds in your garden to encourage bees. That's a form of companion planting.
So bees are important for...
Of course, for your pollination of your plants.
Okay.
Okay, without that, you're not going to have fruit setting, well, on most plants anyway.
Okay. So rabbits can't be brought in there?
No, they most certainly cannot. They will wipe it out in no time.
So you recommend that there should be companion planting? And
A bit of companion planting is always good. If you plant in perfect rows everything, you end up kind of leaving yourself open for infestation.
Okay,
so if you get, you know, there's certain pests which like certain crops, there's certain diseases which are specific to certain crops. So when you companion plant or you kind of grow things a little bit crazy, you know, kind of here, there and everywhere, you're less likely to get an infestation that comes in and wipes out a certain section of your garden.
Confusing the infest.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So one of the problems is nature, that is wind. And then too much of sunshine. How do you protect your plants from that excessive wind or sunshine?
Wind is a difficult one. Without putting up something like, you know, you can grow something like corn, but corn can have a hard time in heavy wind as well.
Yeah.
It will provide some shelter. You can obviously put up like a matting, you know, like a fence of a windbreaker, which can help, or you just pick crops which aren't as sensitive to being taken out by the wind.
Wind as such.
Yeah, so obviously the lower ground crops, your root crops, don't have as hard a time as it would do if you were growing a tomato, which is top heavy. You know, you've got a lot of weight up there and it's high up. So.
What about pests? What about all these disease pests?
Well, there's certain things you can, by having by starting out well, okay, by having a really good soil, really healthy plants, that's the most important thing. Okay, pests really like to attack plants that are stressed out. So by making sure that your plants are healthy and as happy as possible is the first step. The second step is identifying what's coming into your garden. Now, if you're growing something, say, like potatoes, you need to be more careful about specific pests because they can harbour certain diseases that can have a huge impact on your crop. So there's little things called yellow sticky traps, and they're not great as a control method, but they can help you determine what sort of pests are in your garden. Now, a few years ago, it was a lot easier to take care of a slow-moving pest like scale and aphids, etc., because there was a class of chemicals on the market called neonicotinoids, and they were systemic. So you sprayed them on the plant, they got absorbed through the plant, the pests fed on them, and they died. But now virtually everything else on the market is a contact insecticide. So you have to be more vigilant than ever now and get onto the problem quicker, because it's a matter of actually spraying the insect directly, for the most part. So, yeah, it can be quite difficult.
So what type of insects are there? Could you describe a few of them which are really quite messy for your garden?
Okay, so psyllids and thrips, I guess, would be some of the two biggest disease transmitters. Okay, and now I don't know all of the names of the diseases off the top of my head, but they often attack nightshades, so potatoes, tomatoes, tamarillos. Terrible tamarillos, if there's a thrip that comes in and it attacks your tamarillo, it's pretty much done for. It'll start to lose its leaves and it will die. Now, tamarillo is a tree, and people put years into a tamarillo. It's one thing for your tomatoes to get taken out, another thing for your tree to get taken out.
So people who have fruit trees, like I have a lot of fruit trees. I have tried my hand at veggie patch and didn't succeed as much as Hector succeeded. So I said, let me focus on fruit trees. But some of them are taking much longer than what I expected them to fruit. Others are doing extremely well. The limes are doing extremely well. The mandarins only alternate between 2 years. I do not know why.
Okay.
the green apple tree has yet to really catch up as such. So what's the reason why these could be taking more time than the normal time, as people say?
Well, it depends on what was the source of the plant to begin with. Okay, so if you get a tree that's grafted, number one, the rootstock is usually a really hearty rootstock, which can withstand diseases easier, etc. But more importantly, you'll get fruit almost immediately. Okay, but in terms of the size of the plants and all that sort of stuff, for trees, the most important thing is the amount of root room they have. Okay, so
how do you assess that?
Well, it's when you plant them, to be honest. If you move into a house and it's already got fruit trees there, the only way you can really correct the quality of the soil beneath is by mulching. And the way I would recommend, now using grass clippings and stuff is beneficial, but the best thing you can do is to put something down like sheep pellets, like compost, and wood chip or bark, or wood chip's a bit better than bark, around the actual tree. And that way you encourage worms and microorganisms and all that stuff to come through and come to the surface of the soil and bring all that organic matter back down into the soil and loosen the soil up.
But I have a huge set of birds that attack that mulch.
Ah, yes, yes.
How do you keep them away?
Oh, you could try CDs.
keep a cat, is it?
Yeah, a cat can always work. Okay, so it depends on the type of mulch you've got. Some mulch actually compacts down better than others. So mulching bark is pretty decent. But there's really no easy way to keep the birds away. There are techniques you can use. Like I mentioned, CDs. There's also tape you can buy that reflects in the wind that'll keep them out of there. I guess if the looser it is, the more likely they are to get in there. And if they're continually finding a food source in there, I guess it's a good thing because it means there's worms in there, but it doesn't help you out much.
But by the end of the week now, I've had 2 weeks of grass
everywhere.
The whole grass is getting scattered all over the place, and I'm really getting wound up with all these birds. And my wife likes the birds chatter, and they're coming down and having a dip in the little bit of a bird bath that is there, which is an artificial bird bath that we've created, and they create a lot of stuff there. But they sort of mess up on this whole little
thing. They most certainly do. I guess you could try putting something like a weed matting or something over top, but that's going to be unsightly. So again, there's not an easy answer to keeping birds out of your wood chip, mm-hmm. out of your mulch.
Getting back to veggies, yes. as such, how do you start spotting that there is a problem with the plant? What are the signs?
Usually it's a deformation in the growth or slowed growth or discoloration of the leaves, certain diseases that are quite common, like black spot is literally a black spot on your leaves, or things like downy mildew and powdery mildew will leave either a white substance kind of uniformly on the leaves or patches. And those sort of diseases are often due to lack of air circulation and stuff like that. So most diseases are relatively easy if you get on top of them early enough. You can do things that help prevent, like making sure you've got enough space between plants to allow airflow through. You can spray with products like a copper. There are other stronger products out there as well you could use as a preventative, but personally, as a preventative, I wouldn't use anything stronger than, say, a copper sulfur mix. It's a good all-rounder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, we have a saint, and Saint Francis.
Yes.
And we hear our Pope is also Saint Francis. We are Catholics, yep. and the Pope is also Saint Francis. And my friend Hector is a lay Franciscan. Now, what St. Francis said is that you need to go and talk to your plants, uh-huh. and you need to be in the midst of them and chat with them and look after them. Living in a city like Auckland, where life is so busy, the garden patches are small, you don't really have big garden uh-huh. patches. How do you recommend that, hey, you need to spend time with your garden?
Well, I guess going through and weeding and just basic maintenance, you get in there, you spend time with them. But, yeah, talking to your plants is huge. You know, there's scientific studies out there that actually show that music and talking to your plants makes them grow better. And it certainly makes me feel better going out there and talking to my garden.
So you recommend that after you are planted. You know, many people, they think that we have prepared the garden bed, we have put the seeds, we have put the peanuts in it, okay, we water it every day, and we are gone. And
no,
they will grow.
No way. Get in there. You know,
sit
in there. Even you can even make a spot for yourself when you're preparing the garden, a spot without any plants. You know, get a big paver or something and uh-huh. stick it right in the center. Give yourself a space to be surrounded.
Take a book. A glass of beer.
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
So on that note, let's listen to this music that is called A Glass of Beer. There it goes.
Glass beer,
सुशेगा दन पार कोंकणी रेडिओ प्रोग्राम 104.6 प्लॅन्ट एफ एम आवेर मुझे सांगत आज असा जिवान कॅशमोर फ्रॉम द मैत्रटेन न्यूलन सेंटर टॉकिंग अबाउट गार्डनिंग अँड टॉकिंग अबाउट हाऊ टू प्रिपेअर युअर गार्डन फॉर वेजिटेबल प्लांटिंग सो जिवान बिफोर वी ब्रोक ऑफ वी स्पोक अबाउट हाऊ टू टेक केअर ऑफ युअर प्लांट्स हाऊ टू प्रोटेक्ट देम फ्रॉम द पेस्ट and so on and so forth. But you were mentioning during the break something about green manure gardening. What is that?
Okay, so green manure, it's a rotationary crop. That it's probably one of the most underutilized and best ways of, number one, providing nutrition for your garden, number two, preventing disease, and number three, it's a great way of, during the winter months, keeping your garden weed-free.
Oh, wow.
So what a green manure crop is, it can be one of many different crops, but the most common one is a mustard, okay. Which is used as a way of killing disease-causing organisms in the soil.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. We use mustard for flavoring our food.
Same mustard. So it kills nematodes in the soil as well, which is a little microscopic worm which can attack nightshades in particular, uh-huh. like your potatoes and your tomatoes and stuff like that. Then you've got lupins, which put nitrogen back into the soil. So they have a bacteria that lives on their roots, which is able to convert atmospheric nitrogen into nitrogen in the soil.
Wow.
And then
wow.
You've got oats, which add carbon or bulk to your soil. So the way you use these sort of crops is at the end of autumn, when you've kind of harvested the last of your vegetables, you just sprinkle these crops out onto your garden bed. They're incredibly cheap, and you allow them to grow up, and you just let them do their thing throughout the winter. Then when it comes time to planting, or about 6 weeks before planting, you basically get a spade and you bash them into the ground and you dig them into the soil.
Oh, so you don't take them out?
No, you don't take them out. You actually dig the plant into the soil.
Wow.
It can be a good, you can also add other, if you add something like compost at the same time, it can help break it down quicker. So dig that in and allow it to rot into the soil. And so, again, that prevents, it works as a rotationary crop. So certain crops you don't want to be planting in the same spot every year because of the buildup of diseases. And it adds nitrogen very cheaply, and it takes care of your garden space when a lot of people are not gardening.
So you're saying that we need to start rotating our crops, not necessarily plant at the same place which you did last year.
We should, yeah, you've got to be very careful about planting.
Oh,
at
that's
the same
how
spot.
That's the trick, you say, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah, because if you plant in the same spot, there's again, nightshades are a big one here. You end up with the disease causing organisms in the soil, and they build up and they build up. And like a human, a plant can cope so long when it's subjected to something. Mm-hmm. And the more of it there is, the less likely it is to actually cope. Mm-hmm. And so you'll get to a point where the plant will succumb to the disease. Mm-hmm. So although you can get away with planting tomatoes in the same spot for a few years, it is not good practice.
Okay. So let's get into something practical.
Okay.
Let's pick up potatoes.
Okay.
You say this is the right time of the year to plant potatoes, so they are ready to be used for Christmas.
Exactly.
Either to go with the roast, or either to put in the chicken curry to make it a bit more thicker, or, you know, generally potatoes are a good veggie.
Everyone loves potatoes.
Yes.
Yes.
So how do I start from the beginning, preparing the soil?
To start off with, you want to get a good quality seed potato. And the best quality seed potatoes come from the South Island. So go to a garden centre, ask them if they've got South Island seed potatoes. The reason for that is that the diseases that we have for potatoes in New Zealand are not around in the South Island. There's far fewer of them because of the temperature. So get a good quality seed potato. You want to set that out somewhere out of direct sunlight to send up its shoots. So basically you leave them out and you allow them, you know, the eyes that you get on a potato?
Yes, yes.
You just allow those to grow. And to a certain extent, the longer the better. About 10 centimetres is fantastic.
Okay.
And then you prepare your garden bed, as we mentioned earlier, but you'll want to add a good amount of phosphorus to the soil, phosphate. Okay. The problem that people have with potatoes is that they often treat them the same as every other crop, and they end up with an amazing above-ground crop. Totally useless, and very little potatoes in the bottom. So you really want to focus on the phosphorus. Now, it's phosphate. It's obviously important to have all nutrients in the soil. So, you know, prepare your garden bed, as we mentioned, adding lots of nice organic matter. And with potatoes, you basically dig a kind of a trough in the garden, and you mound the soil up around the potatoes.
Okay.
And as the shoots come up, you keep mounding and you keep building the soil up, because that's where they grow. Not down, they grow basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you need to sort of protect that potato that is growing.
Exactly. Well, if it gets exposed to the sun, it goes green, and a green potato is poisonous.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's one side of it. But you're also giving it a nice area to grow in. And it's free draining. Because you've got it mounded above the soil's surface, it's naturally free draining.
So how many potatoes grow to a given potato shoot that you grow?
Oh, that's hard. I guess you could probably get a good kilo per potato.
Oh,
if you do it right.
If you do it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it does depend on the variety. It depends on when you harvest. So when you harvest potatoes early, they're waxy. So they're generally boiling potatoes. And so most early crops, or all early crop potatoes, are waxy potatoes. And then your main crop are usually a starchy potato, or your baking potato. So right now it would be a great time. If you're planning on planting for Christmas, you'd want to plant something which has got a relatively short season. It ranges from about 70 days to 120 days.
Okay.
So getting the right crop in at the right time is going to be important if you want it for a particular celebration.
Wonderful. Let's get to the second one that I have in my mind, and that is cucumber.
Cucumber.
How do you go about that?
Okay, so cucumber takes up a lot of space in your garden. Okay, so I personally don't grow a lot of cucumbers myself, but you treat them similar to any sort of fruiting crop.
Okay,
so you're going to want to have, again, a very nicely well-prepared garden bed, and then you're going to want to add a large amount of potassium to the soil.
Okay,
now virtually all crops want nice, free-draining soil. So you want to make sure that you've prepared your garden bed well. If you're dealing with clay, you want to make sure either you've got a raised bed or you've really worked that clay well. And you also need to have pollinators for the actual cucumbers, or else the flowers will just drop.
Mm-hmm.
They also don't handle huge amounts of wind and stuff like that, so they need to be relatively well protected.
So it is good to have a companion plant along with a cucumber for pollination.
Yeah.
So what's the companion plant for it?
Well, anything that's a borage is a great one. Blue. Anything with the colour blue is really going to encourage bees into your garden. Marigolds are incredibly popular because they're well known, and it's also because they have they encourage good insects and they repel the bad ones.
Oh, that's a good tip to remember as such.
Most
any
certainly.
Other fruit or other veggie that you would recommend that and how we go about it? Any other?
Well, I love growing garlic, but unfortunately it's not the right time of year now.
Okay.
It's a very easy crop to grow, and you might be able to get away with it now. It's about 9 months before you harvest. But with garlic, you want to separate, obviously, the individual garlic cloves.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, you don't want to plant them in a whole clump. Okay.
What happens if you plant them in a whole clump?
If you plant them in a whole clump, you're basically limiting the amount of space that they have to produce pups.
Okay.
And so you're not going to get the harvest.
Okay.
Because the idea is you start with one garlic clove and you end up with, a whole...
bunch of garlic.
Exactly, a whole bunch of garlic. So really the best time is to plant is before the shortest day of the year.
That is... 21st of July?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Midwinter. So,
yeah, midwinter. Okay.
They actually do well if the soil gets nice and cold. In the past, I've actually planted garlic in pots before, and in order to create, because I was in an area where it doesn't frost much in Auckland, I actually laid ice on top of the soil. To help produce good flavour. It also helps with that purple colour that mm-hmm. you get. So with garlic, you want to plant them about 10 centimetres apart.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you don't do much. And that's one of the reasons I love garlic.
So do you keep on sort of collecting the soil and creating a mound like potatoes,
not the same because of the way it grows. You do mound a little bit, but you're not continuing to cover the soil.
Okay.
For the most part, you plant your cloves, about 10 centimeters apart, and you let them do their thing. There's not really a lot else. Once you end up with the shoots coming out, that's when it's a good time to fertilize.
Wow.
Okay, and you know that they're ready to harvest when the foliage starts to die off. And another important thing that people often mess up with garlic is giving them too much water. Towards the end, so basically once they've got their shoots up, you don't really want to give them a large amount of water because you'll limit the flavor as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it has been a great, great joy for me to sort of learn certain things about gardening. Some very nice tips that you talked about of companion planting, of having flowers, particularly marigold as such.
Mm-hmm.
It has been really joyful for me. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Oh, no, certainly. It's fantastic.
Like the music as such. And before you go, I would ask you to say a Konkani word, and I'll tell you what the word is. Deoborodis.
Deoborodis.
Means God blessed day.
Okay, let me try that one more time. Can you pronounce?
Deoborodis.
Deoborodis.
Yeah.
Ah, lovely.
Once again?
Deoborodis.
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 That's great. Thank you very much, Jivan. I hope you have a successful garden planting as you go along. If you've got too many rabbits, you can send some of them across to my place. I don't have any, but my neighbor has a couple of rabbits. Thanks once again. Enjoy yourself for the rest of the day, and I hope we can get you again sometime.
Oh, most certainly. Thank you so much for having me. I really loved it.
Yeah. For all our listeners, just a quick reminder, those who are wanting to go for the play Mogachi Boshi, please get in touch with Hippold or Francis Coutinho and get your tickets. There are the $15 tickets available. The $20 tickets have already been sold. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you will get down to buying some good manure, start getting into your garden and preparing for the lovely season ahead. Enjoy the rest of your week. Deo Baro Dis, Diun Tumka Sograng.
Sorry, Gina.